to Australia. And it's Australia's National Day today. So, Karen Middleton, lovely to talk to you. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Catherine. Yes, happy Australia Day, or depending on who you are here in Australia, sometimes it's called Invasion Day or Survival Day. So, a range of views on our day, National Day.
Yes, and of course, the other big event on at the moment is the Aussie Open. We're not going to talk about the controversy. It's one of the great tennis events of the year. So I hope people are enjoying the distraction from other things that that's providing. However, as we are here, you're having a big row over the rapid antigen tests. How so?
Well, we just can't get them. Here's the bottom line. The Omicron variant of the coronavirus is raging through Australia. The number of infections, hospitalizations, and deaths are terribly high. When we look back over the last couple of years, and we were so very worried about double figures, triple figures, and then in the low thousands, and now we just have thousands and thousands of infections and hundreds of people in hospital and many people dying. So there's a great deal of anxiety around about what was meant to be a relaxed summer and has been anything but, and the access to rapid antigen tests is part of that. The system really hasn't kept up in terms of running your average PCR test arrangement where people would go to a testing site and line up to be tested. So they've now falling back on the use of rapid antigen tests at home to detect whether or not you're carrying the virus and need to isolate and maybe get medical attention. But it's been really hard for people to get these tests, and we've become a little bit like the Soviet Union, where you're kind of relying on people sending each other messages saying, quick, 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 the chemist down the road's got them, and they only have them briefly because they sell out. The government has ordered a lot more of these tests, but they're going through the approval process at the Therapeutic Goods Administration, which is slowing that arrival a little bit too. So there's been a bit of finger-pointing going on about whose fault that is, whether the federal government should have been better prepared by ordering more of these tests earlier on. The federal government says it's the states that have had to get their act together on tests and testing, and also the private sector, which you know, is responsible for selling these tests at retail outlets. So there's a lot of, as I say, finger pointing going on. But the federal government now has conceded to calls for access for at least people on low incomes. So they've arranged for access to free tests for pensioners and concession card holders, which just started this week, which is alleviating some of that anxiety for at least part of the population. But for the rest, they're quite expensive to buy, and there's been a bit of price gouging. There's now an inquiry into that. So all round, it hasn't gone as smoothly as you would have hoped in terms of testing.
Can you explain whether, if you've got a rapid antigen test at home, and you've just said many people can't, but if you test positive, do you then need to upload that to a website? Because I guess a big question that we're about to face, and you are, is the underreporting of cases because people just can't or don't get tested.
Yes, so each jurisdiction is requiring people to now upload, and I think it's right across the country, although don't hold me to that because I haven't checked every single one, but you're supposed to notify if you are positive. Now, I'm sure there's a little bit of rubberiness in that because it's pretty hard to check, but and when that system first came in, there was some overlap that saw case numbers really shoot up, where you were getting a double up between people who'd been for a PCR, then did a follow-up rapid antigen test, registered that, and then you were sort of getting double figures. But I think that's smoothing itself out now. But yes, you are meant to report to try and keep track of those numbers. But of course, if you're just at home on your own and there's nobody checking, it's not really possible to know if people aren't doing that.
Or if they, in fact, can't test and just stay home with what is some kind of cold or flu.
Correct.
They presume that it's Omicron, but they can't confirm it.
And may never know. That's right. So, you know, there's a degree of a grey area with those numbers now, because they've got so high that the system we were relying on just can't manage anymore.
Now, we mentioned the controversy that does surround the National Day, and what is unfolding today?
Well, Australia Day is as you say, the National Day, and there's a bit of controversy that has been in recent years around the date of Australia Day, because it marks the establishment of the first colony at Sydney Cove, which is now Circular Quay in Sydney. The first fleet arrived on the 24th of January, but they set up the colony on the 26th, and that's the day that is marked. But of course, there were violent clashes with Indigenous people, and there's a view that the Indigenous history of Australia has never properly been told, and that this day really doesn't reflect a positive for Australia's Indigenous people. So that's where the issue of Invasion Day and Survival Day came. The debate is ongoing and re-emerges very forcefully every year at this time. And I must say there's much more sensitivity to the Indigenous people and Australia's Indigenous history than there was before. There's more acknowledgement of that. So I suppose it's been an incremental thing. It's also 50 years today since the Aboriginal Tent Embassy was established on the grounds of Old Parliament House here in Canberra, which has been, I think, the world's longest running land rights protest, and there'll be ceremonies marking that here in Australia today. And just in the lead up to Australia Day, we saw success in an issue that's been a problem relating to the Aboriginal flag. People who've watched Australian sporting contests, perhaps most famously when Cathy Freeman won that 400 metres back in the 2000 Olympics in Sydney, she ran around afterwards with both the Australian and the Aboriginal flags. And the Aboriginal flag has been a very important flag for Indigenous Australians and their rights, going right back to 1971. In recent years, the person who designed that, Mr. Harold Thomas, an Indigenous man from South Australia, had licensed the production of the flag to a company called Wham Clothing, and they had started issuing cease and desist notices to anybody who was producing the image of the flag on their clothing. Not only Indigenous charities that were raising money doing that sort of thing, but also the major sporting codes that have an Indigenous round every year and put the flag on their guernseys for that round. So there was a campaign to try and resolve that, and just on the eve of Australia Day, the federal government's announced that they reached an agreement with Mr. Thomas and the company, and that they have paid $20 million to purchase the copyright for the Commonwealth, which means that the flag will now be freely available. And part of that deal was to set up an Indigenous scholarship program in Mr. Thomas's name for Aboriginal students. And all the money will be going to the National Aboriginal and Islander Day of Celebration organisation, which marks a week-long acknowledgement of Indigenous Australians every year. So there are some good outcomes there for Australians all over being able to use the flag, and particularly Indigenous Australians.
Karen, just a couple of minutes to introduce your latest Australian of the Year. We're hoping to interview him, actually, but tell us about Dylan Alcott.
Yes, well, he's got a bit on, Catherine, this week. He's a man of many talents and many and involvement in all manner of different things, Dylan Alcott. He's a tennis champion, he's a disability advocate, and he's right in the middle of trying to win the Australian Open in wheelchair tennis this week. He won the semi-final yesterday and then flew to Canberra for the ceremony last night, where he was named Australian of the Year. He's the first person with disability to be named in the awards history, which is now many decades long. And he's quite an extraordinary young person at the age of 31. He's got his own foundation. He works tirelessly, frankly, for the rights of people with disabilities. He's a tennis champion who won the Golden Slam. I think we discussed that last year. You know, every major slam around the world, and has just been a shining example for what people with disabilities are able to do. So that's what he talks about, not what they can't do, but what they can do, and to encourage people growing up with a disability to believe in themselves and be themselves. So it was a wonderful message that he came out with last night, and he takes over from Grace Tame, who has been a more controversial Australian of the Year, but an equally outspoken and admired advocate in the field of victim survivors of child sexual abuse, of which she is one. And she was involved in helping to promote an organisation that was called Let Her Speak, that worked to successfully change the law in Tasmania that had prevented victim survivors of child sexual abuse from speaking out. And she attracted some more controversy yesterday by appearing at the ceremony that is required of Australians of the Year, outgoing and the candidates incoming, with the Prime Minister, Mr. Morrison. She went and her and her partner had a photo taken with Mr. Morrison and his wife, Jenny, as was the request. And She gave him a pretty dark side eye. There's been some public sparring between her and the Prime Minister over his handling of women's issues. She's not backward in coming forward, Grace Tame, being very outspoken. So wonderful. she's been a critic, yeah, and she goes out in a flame of controversy.
Thank you very much. Karen Middleton's our Australia correspondent.